It's the Opperman Report. And now, here is investigator Ed Opperman.
Okay, welcome to the Opperman Report. I'm your host, private investigator Ed Opperman. You can find me at Opperman Investigations and Digital Forensic Consulting. If you go to my website, emailrevealer.com, or if you contact me directly at OppermanInvestigations@gmail.com. Be sure and check out our Patreon. All the content you hear Monday to Friday, AMFM Radio, you could find on Patreon with all the commercials cut out, so you'll never miss a show. And also, too, we're always constantly picking up new stations, dropping old stations, okay? So if you want to stay tuned in with the show, a good place to do that is Patreon. But our archives you can find at Spreaker.com. I do a live show there every Friday night. All the new content, everybody says, when do the new podcasts come out? It's always Friday night the new podcasts come out on Spreaker.com. You can hear them live. I play them live. And the rest of the week is all repeats. And speaking of repeats, our guest today, Casey Gain Magala, has been on. He's probably a guy's a co-host. He's like a co-host. Man.
You get started, man.
He's the author of the book Inside the CIA's Secret War in Jamaica. And we're really excited because he's got a brand new podcast coming out called Reality Theory. And the debut show is going to be on November 22nd. It's going to start out on YouTube on the Casey Gain YouTube channel. But Casey, before we get into the new podcast, The Reality Theory, tell us about yourself. Who is Casey Gain Magala?
Well, Casey Gain Magala is a former educator, journalist, rapper, and I like to think of myself as an investigative journalist, which is rare these days, that people actually don't just take the government's word at it and actually look into the stories behind the stories. So I'm an investigative journalist. And I have a new show coming out, Reality Theory, and it's going to deal with a lot of conspiracies that are real because, you know, conspiracies are real. The government charges people with conspiracy all the time. Conspiracy to murder, conspiracy to trespass even, conspiracy to distribute drugs. So Reality Theory, we're breaking it down that even like hardcore Opperman listeners who know about the JFK assassination and Iran-Contra and Watergate, you guys are going to be able to enjoy yourselves, get some new information. But also, the people who might not have really studied the JFK assassination, Martin Luther King assassination, could really get a good understanding from the show. It's going to be insightful, a little bit entertaining, a little bit of humor, despite the dark material I'm covering. So I'm really looking forward to it. And starting on the 59th anniversary of the JFK assassination, which is November 22nd of this month. And of course, that's what I'll kind of start focusing on, is the JFK assassination will be our first episode, and then move on to MLK assassination, Iran-Contra, Watergate, a lot of the normal things will kind of new spin. And, you know, cover some modern stuff, Hunter Biden, Boston bombing, Epstein.
You know, I tell you, I really recommend Casey Gain on Facebook. And I guess it doesn't look like you're that active on Twitter, right? You aren't that active.
I just kind of promote like my website and stuff on Twitter. But when I do have content or stuff, I'll promote on Twitter. But just my regular daily opinions, I kind of keep to Facebook.
Yeah, and I really appreciate them because you always have a unique anti-imperialistic view of the world. And you're not afraid to share it, you know, and you're always like right on target, man. You know, like right on target. And you always make me think. And say, you really do, man. You really do. So I really would encourage people. Casey Gain, I don't think it's Magala on Facebook. Is it?
It's just Casey Gain on Facebook. Yeah,
Casey Gain on Facebook, yeah. All right, so Reality Theory, man. You're jumping into the podcast pool.
Right. With Elliot. I'm excited about it.
Yeah, the water's fine. Everybody's getting in. What's the first show going to be about, Reality Theory, on November 22nd?
So the first show, starting off as a one-man show, I'd like to add guests pretty soon. So the first show is going to break down exactly what a conspiracy is and how the term has been kind of weaponized. You know, people have been conspiring forever since Jesus and Judas and Caesar and Brutus and, you know. So breaking down some of the conspiracies through history and also in TV. You know, if you look at Shakespeare, it's a bunch of conspiracies, the Bible, a bunch of people conspiring in the Bible. So, yeah, kind of breaking down what conspiracy is, how it was kind of weaponized due to the JFK assassination, and then breaking down the JFK assassination in a way that, you know, people who might not have done the research or listened to Ed Opperman show can understand it, but also adding some new insight into Watergate, the JFK assassination, and the critics, Ed. And these are people I haven't researched. I've been focusing on the JFK assassination. So now that I want to do the show, I said, let's look at the other side, because you always have to look at the other side, Ed, right? Hmm. So who is on the other side? You know, I've followed great journalists like David Talbot and his book, The Devil's Chessboard, on Alan Dulles' JFK assassination, Russ Baker, his book, Family of Secrets, and other great people like Gaetan Fonzi. So now, let's look at these other people. Are they misguided? Did they get something wrong? Are they maybe a little gullible? Like, where are they coming from? I'm not sure. So the two people who I like to call my magic bullet theorists are Gerald Posner, who wrote the book Case Closed, the definitive book on JFK, according to media sources, and Bill O'Reilly, who wrote the book Killing Kennedy, which is one of the more recent books on Kennedy. Neither book is particularly good. A lot of it is very flawed if you look at actual historians who cover the matter. But both of these guys, Ed, get the most media attention. And you get really good journalists like Russ Baker, and he can't get on TV. David Talbot, despite all his history and journalism, can't get on TV. But Gerald Posner is on TV every second when they got to talk about the JFK assassination or the MLK assassination as some sort of expert, though he has no credentials to kind of be an expert.
Well, and you know, you can't forget, I know you mentioned O'Reilly and Posner, but you can't forget Jeffrey Toobin, who's also in that gang. But you kind of have to give him a pass because he does have to type with one hand.
Well, and I'm not that familiar with Toobin, but I know Toobin. Oh. They all review each other, and Toobin reviews Posner's book and says it debunks all the conspiracy theories, which in no way does it. It's just a kind of rehash of the Warren Commission with a new spin on the magic bullet theory. That there was a twig, Ed. The twig kind of killed Kennedy after the magic bullet flew around the twig, and you know, it took a genius like Gerald Posner to figure that out and put the matter to doubt for all of us.
You know, I was looking into Posner a bit, but you know, when you told me you wanted to talk about Posner, and somehow he got his hands on some NSA recordings about Princess Di. Now, how does he explain being able to obtain these recordings and suffering no consequences?
Well, he's been able to obtain recordings and documents from his start. So his first book, after being a corporate lawyer, he was defending IBM, and his biggest, most high-profile case was defending a Miss America candidate who was disqualified for having a padded bra. So that was his big journalism case. And all of a sudden, Ed, he gets these Mengele files. Joseph Mengele, the notorious Nazi doctor who tortured all sorts of Jewish people in the Holocaust, he gets the files on them. And this is at the same time that it was coming out that Mengele was of interest to the CIA, and that Mengele was dealing drugs in South America. And doing my research on Klaus Barbie, another Nazi who fled to South America, both of these guys got help from the CIC, which was kind of before the CIC, and worked with the OSS to become the CIA. So this guy Mengele got a lot of help from America to flee to South America. Then when he comes to South America, he starts dealing drugs at this kind of the same time. We're getting the start of the kind of Operation Condor, which is uniting a lot of these South American right-wing dictators and their drug-dealing buddies like Klaus Barbie, Roberto Suarez, and such. But he gets these papers, Ed. I don't know how he got them. What his claim was that he was going to do a lawsuit against Germany or the Mengele family, but he never dropped the lawsuit. He never, you know, there was no lawsuit that ever happened, but he got all these pro bono files on this, on Mengele, maybe, I don't know who, from the government, the CIA, but, and now he's instantly transformed from a corporate lawyer to some sort of historian journalist. He writes a novel too, and I have to read his novel, but it's all about kind of intelligence work, and then his big thing is Case Closed.
Yeah.
And he's so yeah, the Princess Di stuff. He clearly has intelligence sources. You know, he wrote a book about 9/11, book about Saudi Arabia, and I think sometimes it's clear like either he's being willfully or unwillfully manipulated by his intelligence sources, or either he knows he's spreading misinformation, or he's just a kind of gullible guy spreading it. So he definitely has some connections to some high up sources. He was. So, all right, let me just kind of backtrack on Gerald Posner. So he writes this book, Case Closed, Oswald Did It. No, nothing new, no real insight. All the JFK real historians, not conspiracy theorists, historians research, people who actually look into and investigate these things, found all sorts of flaws in his book. But he writes this book, and it's gets nominated for a Pulitzer Prize.
Well, you know what, man? Nominated doesn't mean anything. You know, anybody, you can nominate yourself for a Pulitzer Prize.
I'm pretty sure he did.
Casey, you're going to low blow. Down goes positive.
And anyway, so you know, he does this. Then he writes another book on MLK. So he's always on the debunking side of the conspiracy.
Yeah.
There's no conspiracies. James Earl Ray acted alone. Oswald acted alone. And it's not that he's lying in his book. He just leaves out everything. He leaves out all the good stuff that Dr. William Pepper wrote in his books. He leaves out all the stuff that we see in Mark Lane's book, who we'll get back to. So, all right, he has this ridiculous theory, but he's touted by Dan Rather and all these media types as the final say on the JFK assassination.
Yeah, Dan Rather, who got his career started, he was in Texas. He was a reporter there in Texas. First-hand eyewitness to all this stuff, and look what happened to his career. Yep. I think it went pretty well for Dan Rather, you know?
Dan had a nice little career. And again, he's a lot of these media types, they only have Posner on. They never show the other side.
Yeah.
So let's fast track a little bit. He writes all these books. Then in 2010, he gets fired for plagiarism. He gets fired from plagiarism from the Daily Beast, where he's their head investigative reporter, right? Mm. Fired for plagiarism. And then the Miami New Times, which was doing a really great job, actually found multiple instances of plagiarism, not only in his Daily Beast articles, but in his book, Miami Babylon, which he actually ripped them off. So he was ripping off local Miami newspapers and just copy and pasting it at his own work. When his defense is almost like a magic bullet, Ed, a magic bullet went from someone else's article, took that article and put it on Gerald Posner's computer, and Posner, being the genius he is, couldn't tell that he's submitting someone else's work as his own. So these magic bullets are real, Ed, and Gerald Posner's proof because his whole career. So after he gets fired, he actually admits to being a plagiarist. One of the authors he plagiarized shows up to one of his Q&As. And he gets up in this author's face and says, "I am a thieving C-word sucker. I am a thieving C-word sucker." In this guy's face, admitting that he's a kind of plagiarist. In context, the guy called him a thieving C-word sucker on Facebook. So he's just kind of admitting. So an admitted plagiarist. Now, in any other situation, Ed, if you are a community college history major,
yeah,
and you get caught plagiarism on his scale, you're never going to go to college again. You're never going to get credibility. Any professor who gets caught like that, they're gone. I don't know why he wasn't disbarred. I don't know if plagiarism is allowed in the bar. I don't know why he's not disbarred. But bust this, Ed. So what do you think his next career move is?
Podcaster?
No, I think that's coming soon. Actually, he becomes the lawyer for Ahmad Wali Karzai, the alleged Pablo Escobar of Afghanistan.
Oh,
right?
Really?
So he was previously investigating these guys, allegedly investigating them. And his idea of investigating is, "Hey, Ahmad Wali Karzai, are you dealing drugs?" No, okay, he's not dealing drugs. That's Gerald Posner's investigative journalism. How on earth he had Ahmad Wali Karzai on speed dial or is able to reach him and contact him, I do not know. But he's not the only client that Posner has. Posner also represents at least one other Afghanistan warlord against the American army, and he becomes the lawyer for Victor Boot, right? So Victor Boot is the merchant of death, the lord of war. They made a movie kind of based on him in Nick Cage, and he's ex-Russian, Secret Service arms dealer who actually, right now he's in jail, and it's actually Posner. Posner actually, after serving, you know, pro bono, he said pro bono legal counsel for Victor Boot, Now he actually was one who broke the story about Brittany Griner, the WNBA player, and how they were offering to trade her for Victor Booth. In these articles, he's writing again, Ed. He's writing again for Forbes magazine after the plagiarism scandal. I don't get that. A serial plagiarist, like, that is a cardinal sin in journalism. You can't come back from that.
But there are people who get a constant pass, you know. And we mentioned before Lefty Toobin, you know, he gets a he's getting a pass from his most recent behaviors, you know. And I
was he the one masturbating?
Yes, yes. Oh, yeah. Yes, man.
Now I know him.
And they have him. And no, but he did an Oswald book too. The same thing, you know.
In all fairness to him, if he's been propagating the magic bullet theory, he's been jerking off a long time on camera.
Yeah, no, I hear you, man. I hear you. You know? And by the way, too, you mentioned too about this heroin guy. You know, Geraldo did an episode of Nightline 2020 or something like that, where he went to Afghanistan and did a heroin deal. You know, Geraldo.
This is another thing I'm seeing, Ed. Like, these journalists who you kind of see as, you know, Fox News shows were actually once doing investigative journalism. Geraldo gave a pretty good interview to Marita Lorenz and Sam Giancana, not the mobster, but his nephew, who wrote a book about the mob being around JFK assassinated. So once upon a time, I think the thing is, in the 80s, like, only trashy television was, like, not under control by, like, CIA assets. So only, like, Inside Edition, The National Enquirer, Geraldo, Montel, like, they were the only people who would ever do anything. In between their, like, trash segments, they would have a good segment on, you know, JFK assassination, MLK assassination, mm-hmm. CIA drug running. So it is interesting.
That is interesting, because now those tabloids are totally under control. The AMI was totally running interference for Trump, Epstein, that whole crew, you know, with the catch and kill. We know that for a fact. But a lot of these online.
But at least it's double-sided. The one interesting thing, obviously, with the Trump-controlled inquiry, he definitely weaponized the inquiry against Ted Cruz, which was one time I was happy with him. And again, this is another time we kind of get back to the JFK assassination. So other man in the picture who I found out is Chauncey Holt. So it's Chauncey Holt, Lee Harvey Oswald, and Rafael Cruz, Ted Cruz's father, all in this picture. And those not familiar with Chauncey Holt, he was a former Meyer Lansky associate who, you know, turned whistleblower, who said he was involved in the JFK assassination. So Chauncey Holt looks like he's pretending to be on the, you know, Fair Play for Cuba, handing out these pamphlets with Rafael Cruz and Oswald.
It was fascinating. So, you know, by the way, you know, Trump just recently, he's been dropping a couple of dimes on DeSantis. Right when he first said that they called him DeSantimonious, right? The next day, that picture comes back of DeSantis when he was a high school teacher and he was with the solo cups with the teenagers. You know, I don't know if you saw that picture.
Yeah.
Came out last year.
Yeah.
So that pops back up. And then he's openly saying that he has dirt, blackmail dirt on DeSantis.
So I'm looking forward to the Republican primaries. Like, that is watching. That's like a big roast battle rap, and none of those guys can handle Trump. And it's going to be entertaining. So I hope Jeb Bush runs again.
Well, you know, I'm going down to Mar-a-Lago. I'm going to Mar-a-Lago like on the 15th, I think it is. That's when Trump's going to announce his presidency on the 15th.
Okay.
So yeah, so I got my press invite, the whole deal. So I'm hoping to get down there, and I'm hearing a lot of stuff, man. I'm in the mix down here in Florida. I got my ear to the ground. Let me tell you, you know, so hopefully a Matt Gaetz indictment and a Rudy Giuliani indictment.
Yeah, oh, all sorts of stuff going on down in Florida. You should look for. I think Posner's in Florida too. In
oh, really?
Yeah,
oh, it's not safe down here. It's not safe for me down here. Okay.
So and Posner, like, he's back on Fox News, like, as an expert on the JFK assassination, after, you know, serial plagiarism. And he's writing about Afghanistan for Forbes. And he doesn't, you know, disclaimer, I was a lawyer and publicist for the Pablo Escobar of Afghanistan, Ahmad Wali Karzai. When he writes about Afghanistan, he even wrote a book about Big Pharma and the Sackler family, which I haven't read. But according to him, according to Posner himself, like, his clients were responsible for 90% of the heroin being distributed in the world.
Incredible.
And he's quite honest, and it's interesting because there's a video of him on Russia Today, and he's talking about, yeah, I don't buy the denials where Karzai says he's not a drug dealer, the family's so corrupt, they become so rich. And then, you know, 6 months later, he becomes their lawyer and he defends them in the New York Times. And he writes all these op-eds and letters to the editor about what a good Afghan patriot and ally to the Americans that Ahmad Wali Karzai is.
Yeah, and also, too, you know, that's an intricate criminal law. Like, he doesn't have that kind of experience.
Oh, well, exactly. He didn't practice law for 25 years, from 1986 to 2010, 2011. No law practice, and all of a sudden he's a qualified expert to defend Pablo Escobar's of Afghanistan and notorious warlords, and who are also CIA connected. And in the RT interview, he kind of admits that Karzai is on the CIA's payroll. He says, well, they use sort of front companies and they do this, so, you know. But then when he starts defending him, he goes, he's in no way connected to the CIA. So he's, you know, this guy clearly is very intellectually dishonest. Again, just the plagiarism alone. Plagiarism is a combination of lying, cheating, and stealing, right? It's the triple whoppy, especially for journalists. And beyond all his, you know, omissions as a journalist, which is horrible omissions, especially when dealing with a subject as important as the JFK assassinations, which could definitely qualify as misinformation. I don't know why he's, like, hasn't been deplatformed.
Well, you know, that goes to show you. But now, you also, too, you have, we're running out of time, we have information on Bill O'Reilly, too, right?
Yeah, so Bill O'Reilly from Long Island, New York, moves to Miami, too. He moved down to Miami. I guess that's where all the good journalists go to make their bones. Makes friends with a gentleman by the name of Gaetan Fonzi. Gaetan Fonzi is an excellent journalist who's been kind of a critic of the Warren Commission and someone who's investigated the JFK assassination from pretty much the start. So Gaetan Fonzi gives Bill O'Reilly his start in journalism, like giving him a little freelance work, movie reviews, whatever. He also helps Bill O'Reilly get his first job at WFAA in Dallas. Now, this is around 77, 78, same time that the House Select Committee on Assassinations is happening. So this is a really important job for O'Reilly. It's not, I think he was in Scranton before. Like, so from Scranton to Dallas as a journalist, especially with everything going on with the JFK assassination, it's kind of a big move. So all along, O'Reilly is using Fonzi as one of his sources. So O'Reilly manages to interview some really important figures in the JFK assassination. He interviews Anthony Veciana after he was shot. He also interviewed Frank Sturgis. Now, people go to YouTube. There's two Frank Sturgis interviews. There's one from the 90s and one from the 70s. If you watch the one from the 70s, 1977, Frank Sturgis says that Watergate came from the CIA to silence Nixon, and it came from Robert Mullins, who was a CIA agent, and he was Deep Throat, and that Nixon had to be in fear for his life because he was asking for the JFK files. Now, again, Frank Sturgis and Bill O'Reilly are not the most credible of characters, so you always need to find some corroboration. So in looking for some audio, I found a newly released audio file that Jefferson Morley released just this year, and it's a big hour file, so I had to find like the little 4-minute mark where you have Nixon almost begging Richard Helms for the CIA files on Bay of Pigs, JFK, etc., saying, hey, if I'm going to cover for you guys, if I'm going to live for you guys, I need to know what's going on. So a little bit kind of corroborates O'Reilly. So O'Reilly...
But wait, but let me ask you this. Sturgis is saying that he took a dive in order to implicate Nixon in Watergate?
Yeah.
That makes sense, because I always said, man, here's some of the toughest guys. Frank Sturgis was a bad freaking guy, man. You know, I had his nephew on here, the James Hunt.
I remember. Yeah, yeah. And the whole Portugal thing, I didn't know.
Right.
That was crazy.
A.J. Weberman testified down there in Portugal, too, along with the Howard. By the way, too, Marita Lorenz used to have Thanksgiving dinner at A.J. Weberman's house. I kicked myself for not getting an interview with her before she passed.
Oh, man. I wonder if A.J. has any good video files. Because I was looking for... There's lots of good stuff from her testimony in E. Howard Hunt versus Liberty Lobby trial.
Hey, by the way, did you see the thing about A.J. Weberman where he talks about that, who's that guy, that Allen Ginsberg had sex with George Soros?
Really? Allen Ginsberg, the famous poet?
Yes.
Wow, I'm not surprised.
Yes, man. Because AJ knew them both, man.
But I know Allen Ginsberg through family, a family friend of mine.
I met Ginsberg.
Bisexual for sure.
Yeah, I met him a couple times. I'm at Yippie headquarters. But it makes sense, because I always said, Sturgis is one of the baddest guys in town, man. He and his nephew were making napalm bombs. And then I told you about this. He was bombing them in Haiti, the palace in Haiti, over a gambling debt. He had his own B-25 jet. He had his own fighter jet. This guy owned a fighter jet, you know? Yo. So one of the baddest guys in town, all these mafia guys, and you're trying to tell me a couple of security guards and a couple of cops walk into the room and they're just going to say, okay, put my hands up, I give up? You know what I mean? Never going to happen.
Yeah, no, you're shooting your way out and you can kill them and get away with it, probably, with guys like Sturgis and Liddy and and those Cubans, too. Those Cubans are paid assassins.
Like, right.
They were all Bay of Pigs veterans, you know? They were all serious guys, you know? Connected to the Cuban mafia. So O'Reilly actually also tried to interview George de Morenschild, and this is the kind of story where it kind of got Bill O'Reilly in trouble. In Bill O'Reilly's book, he says, the reporter stood next to the door as he heard the muffled gunshot, just to know that George de Morenschild had committed suicide, and the relationship with Oswald will never be known. So he's saying, he places himself in his book as being right there when George de Morenschild committed suicide, which is interesting because obviously if he was there, it had to be a suicide. There was no one else. It's not like O'Reilly saw someone run out. So it's kind of confirming the fact, or not the fact, the notion that George de Morenschild committed suicide. And
wait, you're telling me that O'Reilly was there when de Morenschild?
No, he was not there. He lied in his book.
Okay.
I don't know. Maybe he was there. But either he lied in his book or he lied to Gaetan Fonzie. But Gaetan Fonzie was recording all of his audio calls. So when Gaetan Fonzie's dead by now, was dead by this time, but his wife kept the audio. So when O'Reilly had that passage in his book, his wife played the audio of O'Reilly calling Gaetan Fonzie, who was actually in Florida at the time. He was actually there saying, you know, I'm in Dallas, what happened? Asking about what happened to Gaetan Fonzie and what happened to George de Morenschild, asking Gaetan. So either he was telling the truth in his book and he was there, and then he lied to Gaetan Fonzie maybe to keep him off the trail, or he's lying in his book. But, you know, he's lying one time. You know, it's two totally different stories.
Yeah, but that's interesting. It seems like these guys, you know, they get their hands on some information, and then the rest of their career, like we were talking about Dan Rather, right? And then the rest of their career takes off. We talked about Geraldo Rivera before, who had that information about Marilyn Monroe when he was working on that 2020. The guy was
Sam Giancana, yeah.
The guy was dead broke. A couple of years later, he's got his own helicopter. He's got his own island. He's got his own newspaper. This guy's floating in money. Like, what's going on here? Well, how come no one comes to me? Yeah, got all the dirt.
I've not been asked to sell out either. They must, like, look down on us.
I
like,
know, right?
Like, they're like, there are no Gerald Posners. Like, he's like the world's worst defense lawyer. Like, I've covered some court trials, and sometimes it's been, like, so obvious that the person's guilty. And these defense lawyers, they twist the laws of logic and they BS and they use kind of these logical gymnastics to try and do anything they do to prove a little bit of doubt on the obvious situation that their client is blatantly guilty. And that's kind of the kind of verbal gymnastics Posner does. And which is interesting because, you know, he is a defense lawyer. And when you're a defense lawyer, you don't investigate your client. If you know, John Gotti hired you for defense law, you go, you know, let me go see if he's dealing drugs or he's in the mafia. No, you defend your client and you make up whatever you can to get your client off. If it stretches honesty, if it stretches logic, whatever. Say what you say, get your client off. And that's kind of Gerald Posner's job. But O'Reilly, after this, so O'Reilly goes to Inside Edition and he continues to use Posner as a source. So there's another video. Of O'Reilly, I think he's using an old interview of his with Antonio Veciana, and then he's dropping some serious truth bombs about how the CIA sabotaged Garrison's investigation, about how they definitely had a relationship with Oswald. Then this was from the the top secret files. These are the files that have not been released. And Gaetan Fonzi was accused of kind of leaking some of the stuff to them in some of his materials. But so and I guess to O'Reilly as well.
What do you know about O'Reilly's relationship with Roger Stone?
I don't know anything about O'Reilly's relationship. That's fascinating. You tell me more.
No, I don't know, but you think they're both down there in Miami. They're both traveling in the same circles. You know, I'm just wondering. New York, Miami, that's all Stone, right? They would have to cross paths.
It's interesting, like, to see how the Fox people, you know, post-Trump, obviously their deep state and the deep state tried to, you know, didn't like Trump. So a lot of them, I think Tucker Carlson definitely had a chance. You know, he had a chance and he lost the package that would expose Hunter Biden's laptop. Like, he definitely had a chance to swing the election, even with the gunners. But I think he definitely played the Democrat side. So it's interesting because Roger Stone is such a fascinating character. He's such a deep state, dirty trickster. And I guess what you asked me before is, when did he change? Like, when was the moment he's like, I'm becoming a whistleblower on the deep state and expose them? Was it when he saw the opportunity to ride Trump's tails and he realized that he could use the kind of information from good information from Russ Baker and people like St. John Hunt to kind of bash the Bushes so he could make sure that that Trump beats the Bushes? And then was he, you know, obviously he wrote the book on the Clintons too. Was that, you know, was he really trying to expose the deep state, or is he just trying to, you know, bash the Clintons, get the conspiracy theorists on Trump's side? Because Trump wasn't, it's interesting, Trump in the deep state. I think he was in somewhat compromise, but I think there was a very tense relationship.
You know, I got it. You mentioned Giuliani, you mentioned the Hunter Biden laptop. I had a little funny story for you there. Patrick Berge, right, who's like a computer expert. I had him on the show. He was down there in Florida, too. And he knows all these guys like Patrick Byrne. He knows all those guys that were at that off-the-rails meeting at the White House and stuff like that. Sidney Powell, all those characters, right? Giuliani had him come to his apartment in Manhattan to review the material from the Hunter Biden laptop to see if he could authenticate it. The next day, the FBI comes and executes that search warrant on Giuliani. Remember that?
Wow, yeah, that's crazy.
And they take everything but the Hunter Biden stuff.
I mean, we kind of saw how, like, the intelligence services kind of rallied to call the Hunter Biden laptop misinformation. So obviously that was a chance. And then, you know, they staked their credibility on it and they lost their credibility. But
The thing is, the chain of custody on the Hunter Biden laptop, I think I've got it pegged down. If you listen to my interview I did with Bradley Birkenfeld, who was part of that deal, what happened was Hunter Biden went to live with Dr. Keith Abelow, the Fox News. Well, you know this story, right? Okay. Yeah, so, you know, I got Keith Abelow's license pulled. That was my case.
Yep.
You know this whole story then, right?
I think we talked about it briefly, but let's talk about it on here because I don't remember all of it.
Okay, well, really quick. So Hunter Biden goes to live with Keith Abelow. He leaves a laptop, a diary, all kind of material there at Keith Abelow's house. I don't know what their falling out was, but whatever. Keith Abelow's personal lifestyle is exactly like Hunter Biden's, okay?
Yeah, no. I saw their text messages to each other and you know, him asking for the Viagra. So he's getting, Abelow is definitely giving Viagra to Hunter Biden. And when he didn't need it, you know, Abelow had to be fully aware that Hunter Biden was having sex with like 50 hookers a week. So.
Yeah, sex addict.
On top of that, yeah, so, you know, like he wasn't a struggling old man trying to get it up for his wife.
But the thing is, Keith Abelow went to the Bradley Birkenfeld book signing, okay? Bo Dietl was there, Giuliani was there, Costello was there, Frank Kirkhower was, John Kirkhower, the CIA whistleblower was there. And I've talked to all these guys. They were all there. They all admit it. Nobody's lying. Bernie Kerik was there, and Abelow's brother goes up and approaches these guys and says, hey, we got Hunter Biden's laptop. We want $2 million, okay?
Oh, my gosh.
Right. So that means there's something on the laptop. There's something on the laptop worth $2 million, not this stuff we've seen. There's something else on there, okay?
Yeah.
Because they already put a number on it, $2 million. So Bo Dietl and Birkenfeld go down to Abelow's house down there in Boston and knock on the door. Hey, man, let's negotiate about the laptop. And then they try to make a deal with Kirkhower, John Kirkhower, telling him, hey, you know, we'll give you a pardon. It's worth $2 million if you get the laptop.
Okay. That is crazy. So Abelow sold out Hunter Biden. That's so interesting.
No, it gets better. It gets better. They couldn't come to a deal for the $2 million. The next day, the DEA shows up at the door with a search warrant and take the laptop.
Wow.
It's the greatest story in history, man.
I definitely might have to have you on from 100 bucks on laptop story, because I have all the text. And I, you know, it's just really interesting how much. Like, I was expecting more deep state stuff. I wasn't expecting that much coke and hookers.
But just think, if they wanted $2 million for it, there's something on there that's being utilized right now. The hungover Biden and
What could it be if it's not pedophilia with your niece? Or, like, why couldn't you get worse than what's on the laptop?
I know, right?
It has to be something on Pops.
But, right. It's some kind of business dealings. It's some kind of corruption. But because no one gives a damn about Biden Sr. with his daughter. No one gives a damn about Hunter with his niece. No one cares, man. No one cares.
I think people would care. That's the type of stuff American people care about. They care about sex scandals. They don't care about Whitewater. Too deep, like when you got two. I think Iran Contra was too complex. But they gravitated so quickly around the Bill Clinton scandal. That was way bigger than Iran Contra, and that was so much more trivial in terms of the stakes of our nation.
Yeah, but you had those guys working that story full time, Kavanaugh and Coulter and all that crew, you know, and that guy Claudia Conway's dad. That whole crew, you know what I mean? So who the hell knows, man?
I think it's going to be another Epstein situation, in that you saw the story was repressed so bad, and then it's, you know, it's going to have a chance to kind of explode. And I'm sure the Democrats have already, they have their plan B. They're ready to let go of Biden and whoever they were going to run for 2024 as well. Because I can't see any of this. I can't see Biden running a successful campaign. And Trump will just, you know, I told you so, like, in terms of Hunter buying a laptop, I told you so, it'd be interesting.
Well, the other thing too is Biden was so unconcerned about the Hunter Biden crimes that he appointed who's that guy, the Heinz ketchup guy, John Kerry.
His son was in, so Hunter Biden was in business with these,
right?
Whitey Bulger's nephew, James Bulger, was it John Kerry's son?
John Kerry's son.
So Whitey Bulger's nephew is also Billy Bulger's son, and Billy Bulger was like a big time politician in Boston. So that's a lot. So all these people are really kind of politically connected, and just kind of, you know, peddling influence. Like the Bulger name carries weight both as a gangster and as a kind of politician. Interestingly enough.
Well, there's no shortage of scandals, so people got to keep an eye on Reality Theory coming out on YouTube, the Casey Gain YouTube channel, and also two of these Nixon tapes. Now, what are you going to just play the Nixon tapes? You're going to comment on
them? I think I'm going to play everything. That's going to be my kind of new format. I'm going to play some of the Gaetan Fonzie tapes. I'm going to play the interview between Frank Sturgis and O'Reilly.
Great.
Interviews with Marita Lorenz, got the E. Howard Hunt confession, Nixon tapes I talked about, and then the audio of O'Reilly asking Gaetan Fonzie about the George DeMarco suicide or assassination, depending on your perspective. So, yeah, it's going to be fun. It's going to be an interesting new format I'm going to experiment with, in which, you know, I'm trying to document everything. So I'm trying to draw a little from, like, Dave Emery, and Dave Emery would have had a great sources, and they just read the source so people don't have to read. So I'm definitely basing it a bit on Dave Emery, and also some of these new young hip podcasters who do a really good job breaking down, like, violence and hip-hop. And I'm like, if these guys could only take that investigative attitude towards politics, we could really have a good country and a real good media for once.
Yeah, I hear you. Now, what about some of the material from your book there, Inside the CIA's Secret War in Jamaica? Are we covering any of that? That could be like a whole podcast series.
Yes, well, that might be coming. I don't want to talk about anything, any negotiations, so I'm excited about that. So I'm waiting for that. That won't come out for a while. I won't do anything on that in a while I'm waiting. But in the meantime, I will cover everything else. And I have some fascinating stories about Klaus Barbie and Roberto Suarez, the narco and the Nazi, who were both working with the CIA in, what was it? Not Bolivia. Oh, I'm drawing a blank. Not Bolivia or Colombia. It was the where they made the cocoa paste. So I have a great story coming on that. And I might do some little fun stories on, like, who shot David Ortiz. Not everything's going to involve the CIA or deep state stuff. And some, you know, fun stories about my life in journalism.
Who is David Ortiz?
David Ortiz is the Dominican baseball player who saved the Boston Red Sox.
That's right.
The laughing stock of the league. And he was shot in the Dominican Republic maybe 4 or 5 years ago. And there was a first, and that's another example of a kind of cover up. Now, this shows you how conspiracies are everywhere, not just the CIA, but initially, there was a massive cover up. They said he was shot in a case of mistaken identity, like all sorts of conspiracy. And then eventually, they found out he was sleeping with the girlfriend of a Dominican drug lord, like the Pablo Escobar of the Dominican Republic. And that Dominican drug lord was not happy with David Ortiz sleeping with his girlfriend, so he had him shot. So it's it's definitely a conspiracy again, but I don't think the CIA had David Ortiz shot. I do think they might have been the ones who kind of locked up the guy, because right after he shot David Ortiz, that's when they were like, okay, you gotta go. You can't mess with, you can deal all the drugs you want, but don't mess with our baseball players, boy.
Now, what's going on in Haiti? They had that attempted coup a couple of years back, and now it's all hell's breaking loose down there. What's going on down there?
Well, what I'm kind of hearing is that they're trying to gear up for a U.S. invasion or intervention. So we have the U.S. government-favored people who are kind of in power now. They're asking for the U.S. to come in and invade. Maybe because they're U.S. puppets, and the U.S. says, "Hey, why don't you tell us to invade?" But there's a lot of gang violence going on. There's this guy Barbecue, and this is another famous. I think Vice News is like the Gerald Posner of news organizations, because they always get the embeds with these people who turn out to be agents.
Right.
Like they got the ISIS embed, and then I saw the guy who was showing them around, their tour guide, their ISIS tour guide. I saw him in a picture with McCain, in a couple of weeks as a moderate Syrian rebel. So Vice News has definitely got their interesting sources too. And I think with the whole Charlottesville stuff, they had the white supremacist informant. He was like a big part of that.
Well, when I had that, I have on the Opperman Report Patreon, the top secret Proud Boys initiation paperwork.
Oh, man.
It even says, you have to destroy this once you read all this kind of stuff. Because I had one of the original Proud Boys on the show, an ex-Proud Boy. And the way he...
Did you have Tario on?
No. This is an...
He's an informant. Tario's an informant.
Well, that's what I'm hearing about the whole bunch. Joe Coke deals and informants. The whole crew from top to bottom. Okay. Which doesn't surprise
me. Tario, I don't want to stereotype anybody. He is a Cuban-American in Miami.
Right.
So I don't know. Maybe he does deal coke. And I think that's when they flipped him. I think they flipped him on some coke stuff. And he was like, this guy was like a horrible undercover cocaine dealer. Let's make him a Proud Boy.
Yeah, and it's amazing too. What do you call it? First of all, how you get a Cuban to be a Proud Boy. It's a racist operation. And I did a bunch of interviews too. Yeah, go ahead.
I mean, I there's a lot of he's interesting because he's actually Afro-Cuban,
right?
But a lot of Anglo-Cubans, like they had some. There was one Anglo like white Cuban who was arrested on for white supremacy charges recently, so it's not him. But he's Afro-Cuban, like he's definitely black and African. A lot of other Cubans could probably say, there is no Indio or Afro blood in me. I am 100% descendant of the Spanish conquistadors, but not him.
Yeah, white Cubans are very racist. Okay, that's a fact. I'm Cuban. I see them. But what do you call it? Yeah, but also too, they're really, man, the Proud Boys are really hooked up with Miami politics, man, with the Republican Party. Oh yeah, I did a show with them.
And they're Matt Gaetz and Roger Stone. So there's a little clique going on there, which makes me wonder. They took all. I'm worried. I wonder about Roger Stone. Like, what is he? Is he still an informant? Is he really a diehard? Because he beat his trial, right? He's not in jail.
No, he got a pardon.
He got a pardon, right? But Bannon didn't. Or did Bannon came too late?
Yeah, right. Yeah, Bannon's in big trouble. But it's funny, too. All these guys, too, all swingers, Manafort, Stone. Right.
Stone is definitely a swinger.
When I had Patrick Berge on, who told me about the Hunter Biden laptop at Giuliani's house, because he was down there January 6th with all these guys, he said that Michael Flynn's son had two transvestite prostitutes with him.
No, unbelievable.
And then I had on Oath Keeper Stuart Rhodes, I had his wife and son on, and they said he was a swinger too.
Oh, man.
Yeah, they're all How do they have time? You know what I mean?
It's like, especially people who may or may not be government assets, that's a real good way to compromise somebody if you have some, you know, sexual dirt on them. So, you know, I mean, you might want to elevate someone you have some good dirt on, because then you could get them.
Yeah, carrot and a stick, you know. Later. Carrot and a stick. It's just like Matt Gaetz and DeSantis and that other guy Greenberg, you know. Did you ever see that there's a video, a YouTube video, of Joel Greenberg? And they show the whole thing. He was going to get arrested by the U.S. Marshals because he's violating his bail provisions, right, and his bail conditions. And it comes over the radio, and local cops pick up and says, "Oh, no, give me a call on the phone. We'll take care of that for you." Okay? Yeah. Then there's like a standoff at this guy's house where he's telling them, and these are friends of his.
So Greenberg, the guy who snitched on Gaetz?
Right. Well, yeah, the guy who's trying, well, with all this might snitch on Gaetz if someone just listened to him. Okay, but he's convicted. They're laughing about, oh, yeah, he got caught talking to some little kids on his computer. And then he's telling them, it's all on recording, that he took Tannerite and nails and screws and he buried them in the front yard and he's going to shoot them. They're IEDs if his buddies come up there and try and arrest him. Then he's telling them, I can't go to jail. I'll get dope sick. I'll be dope sick in jail. And they're telling him, we're not going to search the house. Don't worry. Just come out. This is all on tape.
Man, Florida, what a place, man.
Yeah, there's a lot of petty crime here in Florida, but there's a lot of big cover-up stuff, too.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Throughout history.
We only got a few minutes left there. Mr. Casey Gain Magala, Reality Theory, November 22nd, debuting across the world on YouTube. Now, what are you going to do about YouTube, man? You know, they do nothing but... I can't upload to YouTube right now. They shut down my channel. I got strikes on the new channel.
I'm really going to go so heavily legal, and I do have like a couple friends who have legal action, and it is a serious thing, and I might actually work with other YouTubers to create a kind of a legal alliance where we just can't be shut down like that, and also to attack other people for actually spreading misinformation, like, you know. So I'm waiting. I don't anticipate YouTube putting me in their algorithm, so I'll be sharing heavily on outside sources, and I might even go on the Discord, you know, go on Reddit, promote on Reddit. So I'm just I'm really ready. I have all my legal matters represented. And if, you know, a Posner wants to come after me or anything, I'm really ready to take them on in court. And looking forward to it. Because I feel like in a court of law, certain things have to come out, right? So,
yeah.
I'm not your average Joe Schmo. You can't just shut down my YouTube channel. I can get the ACLU on speed dial.
Well, good luck, man. I got to tell you. No, I'm serious, because I think first of all, with Musk taking over Twitter, man, that's just going to be a nightmare.
I don't know. How can it be any worse than before with them shutting down the Hunter Biden's laptop? I don't think it can get any worse than it was before.
He shut down Robbie Martin the first day.
For what?
Making a joke.
Okay.
Okay, it was a suspension. He's back up. But, okay. You know, yeah, I don't see any hope with Musk. But then again, you're right. Can it get any worse than you know, that whole Hunter Biden stuff? I don't know.
Yeah. So I'm hoping. I mean, Musk is, I don't know.
Maybe
he'll be the final good billionaire who does something nice. But no, I think that the free speech angle is very important. I think people trying to dilute it with, like, white supremacy and N-word. I don't care if people are saying the N-word on Twitter. If that's a sacrifice I need to make to get real true information about what our government is doing to not have so-called conspiracy theories suppressed, I'm willing to let people say the N-word and have their free speech. And if racists want to be racist, they can. The racism is done, man. Like, the people who are racist are people in jail and incels, right? They're young white men on a computer who can't have sex. They blame black people. They're the racist. Your alpha males, your guys on the football teams, your Ed Oppermans, you guys are all cool with black people, right? It's a kind of... I'm way more worried about the deep state supremacism than white supremacism.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I've had a couple of people on lately that were optimistic about all this, and I think it's just going to get worse, and we're going to see even Patreon and Reddit and those kind of forums are also going to be getting deleting anybody putting up any kind of content. And the thing with YouTube, you got to understand, even if you're in 100% compliance with CDC guidelines, if you just say the wrong word, all someone has to do is file a complaint, and they hear that word, and they take it off. You know, they're not even listening to what you're saying. You know?
Right. That's why I'm making sure to say C word sucker. And I will be on my podcast as well. And I'm definitely not going to say anything that could ever be misconstrued as anti-Semitic, anti-white.
Good luck, man, because I got to tell you, I did a show about the election, the controversy of the election deniers, and I got pulled for being an election denier. You know, like they don't, as long as the words are there, you know, they don't care. If you can't talk about this stuff anymore.
Anyway. Well, I think it might need to be a big lawsuit coming, man. I think maybe we all need to pull all together. All of us people who have our information suppressed need to come together and take something over, either start our own platform, go to a new platform. But the problem is YouTube spent so many years. When YouTube started, it was such a you could get so much good information and there was so much free speech there. And then people got dependent on it. And now...
But also, too, there was so much manipulation, too, that what they would recommend for you, you know, just weird stuff. But now, if you log, because all my YouTube channels are shut down, so I'm not logged into YouTube. And if you go to YouTube, like what they offer the public when you're not logged in, it's all cartoons. It's all nonsense. It's just the goofiest stuff, people doing playing pranks and stuff, you know, but it's all highly produced, like by companies. Anyway, we're out of time. Reality Theory.
All right,
I'm going to be at the edge of my seat November 22nd. I know what I'm going to be doing. What time is your first show is going to be released on November 22nd at Mr. Casey
Game? I'm just going to release it first thing in the morning.
First thing in the morning.
First, 4:30 West Coast time, 7:30 East Coast time, you know. And I might drop a few clips before it to tease it.
That's November 22nd on the Casey Gain YouTube channel. And I've heard that people are going to be up all night camped out in front of their computer in tents. Waiting for the. I heard this. It's like Beatlemania all over again. They call it Casey Gain Mania. Hey, brother, thank you so much. I love when you come on the show. I really do. And I really recommend people check him out on Facebook because he's got this really insightful take on just about every issue. Thank you so much, my friend.
Thanks, Ed.
Good night.